Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Thanks so much again for joining us. Well, there's a new voice that's leading the public radio program, The Takeaway. Tenzina Vega was formerly a top journalist at The New York Times and CNN, reporting on race, inequality, and class in the United States. Focusing on inclusion and diversity in newsrooms has always been one of her key passions. In 2016, during her time at CNN, she created a 10-point plan called How Newsrooms Can Stop Being So White. The following year, she wrote an article for the Nieman Lab telling media companies it was time to pass the mic. Now, this week, The Takeaway is live from WLRN here in the studios in Miami, discussing many of the issues key to the listeners of South Florida, like climate change, gun violence, and, of course, our region's rich diversity. Tenzina Vega joins us now in studio. It's such a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I know we were joking about who's hosting this segment, because it's a host and a host. So it's always don't feel like because I'm in this chair, it doesn't matter.
I do respect the chair. I have a deep respect for the chair, perhaps now more than ever, have to say, now that I've sat in it. So
yeah. You know what? Because you spent time in the newspaper business and television. Why did you want to be in radio? Why did you want to do this job?
First of all, who says no to hosting their own show, which is a pretty huge opportunity? But really, I think all of the media that we're confronted with, Ishay, every day is overwhelming. And I think this was an opportunity for me to expand both professionally and expand to tell the types of stories and the type of reporting that I had already been doing at these other places. You mentioned The Times and CNN, and really take this out to a different audience, right? A broader, in many ways, broader audience. I think radio in particular is something that is so critical. I think back to Hurricane Maria, for example. When it hit Puerto Rico, one of the few things that was holding on, one of the few ways people in the more rural areas could communicate was via radio. And so it's still a critical tool for a lot of people. But you can also, you know, reach people on digital. You can reach people in different ways. It just, to me, it was an area. And by the way, I was an intern at WNYC a very, very long time ago. So I had had a taste of it. I just didn't have the host chair.
I gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't totally alien to you, but, you know, when you think about you've worked in the other mediums, you know, you worked in print, you worked in television, and this is so different. I mean, but was that transition difficult at all for you?
Or? So what's difficult? So I think in some ways, the connecting thread in all the media that I've done has been digital, right? So even when I was at The Times, I was writing, but I was still doing audio podcasts. I was still doing videos. And when I went to CNN, I added on, you know, what it felt like to do live television. But still, the main focus was digital. So working in multimedia platforms and working with audio in its purest form and going out and recording and getting video and putting that together with still photography and the written word is sort of my comfort zone, right? It's how I was raised as a journalist in many ways. And so to me, what struck me about the job is really the intensity of what it means to be a host, the pace of the show, right? The production of how this comes together. And I am still in awe of the work that we are able to do and the speed with which we are able to do it. I said to, you know, one of my producers, I said, yeah, it's almost like you're putting together a mini New York Times in an hour, you know, and that's a stunning feat. And for those of you who've never seen how radio gets put together, I highly recommend checking it out.
Yeah, please don't think that I just sit down and start talking, that people like Tenzina and I do.
Yeah,
that.
No, there is a whole team of people here who are making this work.
My producers make me look very good. You came in at a very unique time because so much was going on because of the Me Too movement, but specifically in the media and specifically public media.
That's right.
So much was changing, and your show was really almost at the center of it all because of the previous host and everything that he was accused of. I mean, first, let's just start with this. When you came in and you know you're following that sort of story, what's your approach? Do you want to ever try to tackle that problem or get as far away from it? I mean, you're coming in and taking over. What was your opinion of that?
Well, I think, first of all, and you mentioned this just now, I've been working on issues of inclusion and diversity in newsrooms almost by default, right, since I started in this business. And it's become much more of a formal thing for me as the years have gone on. You noted some of the pieces that I've written about this issue. I've tweeted extensively about it, but I've also written a lot about it. So I'm very conscious of it. I'm a woman. I'm a woman of color. I'm a woman that, you know, came from a low socioeconomic background. I grew up in public housing. So all of these things are things that don't necessarily fit the profile already of who we think of when we think of public radio hosts, when we think of top columnists, right? We don't think of that. And so I'm already sort of an anomaly in this space in many ways. And I've taken that as both an opportunity and it's a challenge. To me, the opportunity, both at WNYC, has been to finally, what I think is happening in the industry is a course correction. And unfortunately, the course correction is coming at the expense of or is coming at a time when it's following some pretty horrific things that have happened to people in media, right? And it's not limited to public media. I mean, we saw this at the New York Times. We've seen this at other news outlets. We've seen it in the boardroom. We've seen it, you know, in Hollywood. So I think what we're seeing now is it's sad that it has to take such a terrible thing to happen for change to occur. That said, change is happening. And I think the industry is recognizing that it has to course correct, not just because we need to fill the chair with someone who checks a bunch of boxes, right? And I think that's where we get off track by thinking, okay, now we're going to, you know, solve this problem by getting someone who checks off, you know, the diversity box or the inclusion box or the woman box or whatever boxes. We're getting people who are qualified for these positions into the jobs that they're deserving of.
Yeah, but how should managers go forward? How should they be looking at this when you had really almost like this group of white males, a mm-hmm. Number of hosts all of a sudden gone, and you're thinking about replacing them. And that's the conversation right now is like, well, there is no inclusion and there's no diversity. So the reaction is going to be, well, then let's go find that diversity.
Right. Right. And I do often say the last thing you want to say to somebody is we're reaching out to you because we want to become more diverse. I mean, that's, you know, I think that's an unfortunate way to approach inclusion. I think it's really incumbent on organizations. You know, I think about this all the time. You think about Silicon Valley, right? We're able to solve problems that are beyond, you know, that we didn't even know we had. Right. And we're creating technology to do things that we didn't even know we wanted to do. And yet we sit here and say we can't find qualified people of color. That just doesn't jibe for me. That seems to be more about resistance than it is about actual change. If you can create an iPhone, you can figure out how to find qualified and diverse and inclusive people to bring into your organization. So a lot of it just feels like an excuse, quite frankly.
We are talking with Tansina Vega. She is the new host of The Takeaway, took over that position not that long ago. And they are here at the WLRN studios in Miami for this week, doing their program from here, covering a lot of the issues that you hear all the time, because they're talking about the issues that are important to folks here in South Florida, like climate change and so forth. You know what? Sticking with what you said, though, is I wonder if you don't have managers in news and they talk about diversity, but they're also thinking about their audiences. Are the audiences diverse enough? Does it matter? Because I've always heard that saying, like, mm-hmm. Well, I got to find somebody who looks and sounds like my audience.
Right.
So does that mean that the audience is just a white male?
No, I think that's the excuse. Again, I think that it's a question of, you know, if we do that, it's almost the same thing that we say about culture fit, right? I want to hire people that I understand. It's a comfort zone. People feel comfortable there. I don't think what I'm saying in my show is anything that's not newsworthy or anything that people who aren't, you know, we're trying to cover things across the country. So we're here in Miami. We're talking to Floridians about the issues that are important to them. So that's irrespective of whether or not I'm a woman or a person of color, right? I think that's news. That's journalism. I think often too long, these are excuses that we've used or that organizations and not just media have used to limit the representation that they have.
So when you take over this program, does something change? And obviously, you bring your own personality.
I was going to say,
you're different. No, but I mean, like, is there something that changes in the way you approach the programming? Because, yeah, you are a different host, but...
Yes. So journalistically, to me, the most important thing, I think, you know, having worked in at the New York Times, having worked in cable news, CNN, all the big outlets here, I think particularly now, we're assaulted with media on a daily basis. There are a million podcasts you could listen to right now. There are, you have your choice of, you know, Twitter feeds to follow, et cetera, et cetera. To me, I feel that we are getting lost in an avalanche of news. And what we need to do is take a step back and say, okay, what's really happening here? At the same time, I think people are a little bit tired of always hearing from only experts, and they really want a combination of how does this affect me, right, on the ground in Miami? How does this affect me in New York? Let's hear from people who are really going through this so that we really can have an American conversation. And I think part of my goal was to say, you know what, there are conversations happening here in Miami that aren't happening in San Jose, for example. There are conversations that are happening in San Jose that aren't happening in Omaha, and vice versa. And we can go around the country, and that's part of the problem, right? And so hopefully what we're trying to do is bring these different voices to the table so that we can share information. Americans are very segregated country. We don't like to admit that. We don't engage often with each other on an interpersonal level. And I think that's part of the division that you're seeing now. So what we're trying to do journalistically is open up this conversation to others. What this also offers, I mean, you know, me being in the chair, I am a lot very receptive to certain types of stories that I think don't get told. One of the biggest stories that I think often does not get told is one of class and one of real economic inequality. And we talk about racial inequality, and that's a critical thing, but we also need to understand the numbers behind it. So I'm trying to bring more real voices to the table. I'm trying to bring a lot more data to the table, things that can help us frame contextually what we're going through as a country.
When you brought this up at CNN, what was the response?
The response to?
When you brought up and you said to them, it's like, hey, listen, here's this 10-point plan on, you know, how to keep newsrooms from being so white.
They loved it. So here's what happened. So that happened organically. That was the second article that I wrote. There were two pieces that I wrote. The first happened, both of them were spawned on Twitter. They started with my reactions to the numbers. American Society of News Editors often comes out with these numbers. I think it's yearly or every other year, where they describe how many people, you know, of color are in different newsrooms around the country. And those numbers have not changed. And so when I first started at CNN, I did this tweet storm that generated a conversation among editors across all platforms, Mother Jones, New York Times, you know, you name it, and started that piece. After that, we're talking almost 2 years later, there was another conversation. At this point, I'm thinking, this is crazy. We're still talking about how to change this. But we're talking around it, right? We're not talking directly at the issue. What is it that people can actually do? And so that was a conversation I had with my editor. And she says, you know, you got to do this. We got to write this. So they were 100% behind putting this out there.
Where did this passion come from?
The passion came from my lived experience, I think, you know, a lot. And also just because it's not just about me. Again, when you look at the numbers, you look at the ASNI numbers, you see the stalling, you say, wait a minute, our country is becoming browner, okay, but our newsrooms are not. The rest of our, you know, we haven't even seen a lot of that change at the, you know, at the federal level. We've had one black president in this entire, and no women, you know. So here we are in 2018, and we're still dealing with these issues.
So as you're coming up, you know, in the business, I mean, who are your role models? Who did you look up to?
I came up in the business to be honest with you, I watched a lot of television when I was a kid, when people used to actually have to be home to watch the news. Do you remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
When the news only came on at 5 and at 6?
I'm a Gen Xer, I know.
So am I. Thank you. I feel so good that you said that. I'm not alone. No one cares about us. You do realize that. So for those Gen Xers out there who remember watching the nightly news when you had to be there, growing up watching my parents read the paper, there was sort of journalism was always around me. And I didn't ever really expect to end up at places like the New York Times. And even when you end up at a place like the New York Times, and I started as a clerk, you know, it wasn't like a big sexy job. I was a clerk. And I didn't expect to, you know, do much more. And they'll tell you, clerks don't write for the paper and, you know, you're never going to get anywhere. But, you know, you do the job, you keep saying yes, and sometimes things work out.
As we finish up, I wanted to ask you, I mean, you're from Florida.
No, I'm from New York.
You're from New York. Mm-hmm. You grew up in, no, you lived in Florida at any point?
No.
No. Okay. No. That's my mistake.
I do like Florida.
Okay. Well, no. I mean, how many times have you been down here?
A couple times. I guess my first time was when I was, can't even remember, actually. My dad lives in Florida. That's probably what you're thinking.
I see. I gotcha. But I mean, I wanted to get your impression of Florida and the time that you spent here so far. I know it's not a lot, but you know, I love hearing from people about their thoughts on the state of Florida because, you know, Florida gets
a lot of attention, not always good attention, should I say. But it's often at the butt of a lot of jokes, unfortunately. But I do think
we're used to it.
Yes. But the work that we're doing here actually this week is really important. We are looking at climate change. And we've been looking at not just the sea level rise, but also the business around that. What's happening? What are the insurance companies saying about this? What's the business community doing about this? What is the real impact that climate change is going to have on this state? And one of the things I think people don't often connect is that climate change is directly impacting gentrification, right? Which is something that we're here reporting on. We're in Little Haiti, mm-hmm. and we're in different communities talking to people about what that feels like, right? But we're also talking to children about gun violence, right? And not just the students who had to suffer that tragedy in Parkland, but also students, largely Black students, low-income students who are dealing with gun violence every day. So I think, you know, we can joke about a lot of these issues, but Florida is also a critical state politically, and it's a critical state for a lot of people, and there are a lot of communities here, and there are tons of stories that have to be told.
Tanzina Vega, again, the new host of The Takeaway. The Takeaway is here at WLRN Studios all week this week, covering all these stories that she just mentioned. Tanzina, thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.